Sir! Shotgun!
Anything's better than walking.
Here we go again!
Hello and welcome back to the Rampant Net podcast, Anger, Sadness, and Envy. I'm Narcogen and I'm here with Black Star, and we're continuing. This is part two of our podcast about the Ark. And we're picking up right after the Sentinel fight outside of the door to the map room. And we're heading over with Sergeant Johnson over to what will be the landing site for the Dawn.
Well, after you leave the door area, you're told that there's a potential landing zone
that you have to clear. So you've got to fight your way. Yeah, you've got to fight your way even just to get there first. And on some of the higher difficulty levels, it is definitely one of the more challenging areas, especially with the ghosts. If you don't take it just right with the amount of vehicles and weapons that you actually have.
Yeah, if you don't run over enough of your own units, that was mm-hmm. you drove right over that mongoose there.
Well, they get in the way. Yes, but once you get through the tunnel, you actually get a chance to see this overhang in this very rocky area where there are several tanks, some of the anti-aircraft ones, right. As well as a regular guarding guarding Wraith.
So you've also got a battle going off in the distance here. You've got these these limited AI banshees and
hornets.
Annihilating each other in the distance over the desert.
And I love the new anti-aircraft tanks. Those things are really, really cool.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if you could drive one of those?
Hell, I would love to drive and shoot them, because the weapons that they seem to be using are those, good old classic, fuel rod shells.
You can drive them.
Yeah, but you can't shoot them.
It's not by design.
You can't shoot them, though.
That's true.
And that's what I would love to do. I would love to point those things down. Of course, they're using them on anti-aircraft stuff, which seems kind of strange to me, actually, because although they're really cool air-bursting stuff, the rounds are going at an incredibly slow rate. So
yeah, they don't seem able to hit much. I don't see how that could be an effective,
let alone terribly threatening to the Dawn.
Well, to the Dawn, I could see them being damaging.
The Dawn could land on them, and that would be over. So you got to think, okay, there's two little tanks against, I can't imagine what the metric tonnage of something like that would be. They'd be crushed like little eggs. So it is kind of curious to me, especially considering the size. And even if the Dawn waited, how many shots could they actually do to the underbelly of this thing? I mean, the Dawn is actually huge. Compared to these things, the Dawn is actually small compared to the other Covenant vessels. But mm-hmm. In here, I mean, you see this thing swoop down in this, gigantic, approaching,
great scene,
beautiful cinematic moment.
This is my favorite level in Halo 3, and it's at least partially because of this sequence, this battle, and this interactive sequence that you get after this, which is not a cutscene.
Nope.
They don't take camera control away from you.
Nope.
And it's a lot of fun, actually, to replay it and position yourself in different areas to get a vantage point on the scene.
To get a really nice angle on it, because you can get some beautiful shots.
Look! Up high! Here she comes!
Is the Dawn rated for atmosphere?
I guess we're going to find out. Hey, take cover!
Thanks, Chief. Wouldn't have lasted much longer up there. Come to the back of the frigate. Did the elites get a fix on the cartographer?
Yes, ma'am. Just on the other side of that wall. But it's surrounded by brute heavy armor.
Don't worry. I've got a plan. If we can't fly over the wall, we'll go right through it. Chief, take one of the tanks. Lead the way. If you find any locked doors, Spark will be happy to pry them open.
I will certainly try my best.
All right, then. You heard the lady.
And then you can do that again when you replay. If you replay the film, you can move the camera even further away and observe yourself observing the scene. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
And it's such a lovely backdrop too. They've got a wonderful skybox here. They've got some lovely architecture that kind of looms over as kind of this big open claw.
And you have these
wonderful
drifts
mountains,
of sand blowing in the distance. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, and air bursts from all the different weaponry. And just off to the side, you can see one of the rising spires from the Ark itself, over the sun. It's just absolutely, you know, awe-inspiring, you know, area. So having the Dawn land here is just, you know, one of the best moments in the game, I think. But, yeah, it's just the, I can understand them having the mission there, but having those two little tanks seem or feel as threatening as they're supposed to be, you know, it just seems like the Hornet and or Banshee fight in the back is just that, it's background. And the tanks themselves, while formidable to you, even though they're not, you know, targeting you at all, don't seem to be terribly effective weapons against a vehicle as large and as capable as the Dawn. Well, that's just it. I mean, you look at those cannons, and the cannons are bigger than the tanks.
I think we get hackers to hack the turrets so they fire tanks.
You think? That'd be nice.
All right. So now you do get the cinematic letterboxing, but you don't get the, you don't lose camera control. So it is one of these perspective moments that are, there are many of them in Halo 3.
And it delivers the new toys.
Well, the old toys.
Well, like technically, yes, but
Scorpion tanks.
They're adjusted slightly. They've got now a turret in the front that's manned by a human being, as opposed to simply having four particular areas where humans can latch onto.
Right. And a warthog, if you prefer to use a warthog.
Yep. I always go for the tank, personally.
If it was a Gauss warthog, I would go for that. But yeah. I usually go for the tank. At the higher difficulty levels, you really want it because the marine drivers aren't reliable enough to guarantee your safety.
Nope. I don't think they ever were.
But even without the secondary fire on the tank now, you have to have a Marine to use the secondary fire, and he chooses his own targets and his own moments to fire. You've basically just got the main cannon here.
I can't say I'm a big fan of that. I do miss the original option of the medium and long-range weaponry.
It's still so overpowering, though. If you're paying attention, there's really nothing that can threaten you while you're driving this thing. You have to start adding in skulls.
Yeah, the only problem is the cyclic rate, is picking a target and hitting it and making sure that you've got enough reload time to get the next target before you're in getting hit yourself. So, yeah, if you're good enough with the tank and you hit people enough at range, then, yeah, it's not really an issue not having that extra gun.
We just talked about hunters, about them being not as dangerous, and of course with
not against tanks.
With three tanks here, I mean that was not a challenge. In fact, this whole sequence I think is a player service. This is not a challenge. No. This is a multimedia experience the player is having.
Yes.
Phantom inbound.
Is this your? Is this your first chance to take out a Phantom in the game?
You had to ask. You'd have to go back to the other podcast.
I think it was still an open question whether you can use one of the turrets in Sierra 117 to take out
to actually that get it? Yeah, because I don't know if there's any rockets.
I've never managed it. There's no rockets there.
Yeah.
But there is a turret.
Interesting question.
I'm wrong. In the storm. It's hard. There is a missile turret there, and if you hit things just right, you can get to the missile turret, and you can use that. If you're at a low difficulty level, then the amount of ammo it has left in it will be enough to take out one of the Phantoms as it flies away. If you get to it just right, you can get it before it gets damaged and falls off, and so you'll have unlimited ammo, and then you can easily take the Phantom out before it gets away, as well as the rest of the raids in that area, too. So this is not the first Phantom you can take out, but since it's just coming down and you've just been given a tank, this one's a gimme.
Yeah, it's a complete gift. Well, the question is, can you hit it, you know, before it has a chance to take off? And if you're quick on the draw, then it's not even an issue.
It hangs there long enough. Yeah. Some of the other ones are tougher to get because they'll take off. They're further away and they'll take off faster. But I think you can get a total of four of them before you actually go through the door. There's this one here, and there's two or maybe three in the next room. Let's take a look.
Depending on the difficulty, do they actually change? Do they actually get more of them? Or they just get off faster?
So. I don't think so. I think they're just tougher. They take more shots to kill at the higher levels.
Well, speaking of that, because I think it takes, four or five hits from a tank?
Normal, I think four.
Four. I always wondered.
There is a vulnerable spot though.
You said the turbines in the front.
The turbines are vulnerable spots.
Yeah, I always thought, because I was trying to dump tank shells through the door, and in that shot that we saw there, I actually got one inside. Yeah. I always felt that if you were able to penetrate the armor and get into the interior, it would have a better impact on destroying it.
The only thing you can do with that is that if they're carrying troops inside, if they're spawning hunters or something
inside, it might kill them.
Or there are units that are manning the guns, then you can kill those and they'll fall off.
Okay, that's
cool,
interesting.
That.
But yeah, no, I always thought that, you know, if you could get a shot just in the right spot, one shot, one kill, we'll blow it up from the inside.
Mm-hmm. Next time you play, we're watching just around the corner from the landing zone, leading into the finally broke the door. There are four ghosts waiting. They take off in groups of two to go and attack you, backing up the Wraith tank that is there. And Halo usually avoids things like this, but let's look at what's laid out here. There are three of the barriers. And there are some troops hiding behind those barriers, some grunts and some jackals. And there's a sniper perch. And up on top of the sniper perch, there are three plasma turrets manned, and there two of them are manned, the ones that are facing the direction the player is, manned by grunts. But on the ground, near the barriers, strategically placed, is explosive plasma fusion cores. And, of course, it's the easiest thing in the world to tag one of those with the tank from halfway across the map
and clear the whole thing.
This really is just a reward. This is not a combat sequence. No. This is just a little bit of fun shooting fish in a barrel.
It's just pretty is what it is. It's just pretty seeing Covenant Tech blow up. But I actually remember the first time I got a chance to see from the Covenant perspective one of these videos and one of these films. Myself actually and the Master Chief and the Marines coming after them, and it was such an interesting and memorable moment to suddenly have the entire shifting perception of being on the Covenant side as opposed to on the Marines, because in literally two straight games you have always been on the Marine side, you've always been following what the Marines do, the Covenant has always been in your gun sights. And now, for the first time, you get a chance to see what it's like seeing a human tank coming at you, seeing human vehicles coming at you, and really the whole displacement and whatnot. It really, really was an interesting and fantastic scene.
I wish in the playback that you could lock the camera position to an arbitrary unit. I'd love to. I mean,
like a grunt or a jackal.
There's a third-person camera for the Master Chief. You can either look through the first person, or you can see the third.
Mm.
You can unlock and have a free cam, but you can't lock the camera to any other unit. I wish you could say, okay, here's this brute chieftain. I want to follow him. I want a third-person camera on him. Because otherwise, when you have the free cam, you've got to do a lot of work to keep these enemy units in focus, especially if you want to have a view where you're looking from behind them towards the enemy, towards the Marines coming in, towards the Master Chief coming in. It really would be useful if you could lock it onto a third-person cam around that unit. And then all you'd have to do is orbit. You'd only have to keep it in view. But instead, you've really got to micromanage the camera once you go to free cam to keep the view useful.
And it is smooth for the most part. There are some subtleties that are some, you know, specific moves and whatnot that you can't do because it allows a sweep and a movements up and down to a certain point. But so it's not super exact or precise, but still, it's absolutely fantastic. Even just having the option.
Right. Okay. So now the tanks are coming up around the corner, and
where you were before.
The Wraiths have spawned. We're back at the door. We've already cleared out this area once, and now the Covenant have reinforced it. They've brought in tanks, and there's another Phantom. It's dropping off the second Wraith, and then it goes to take off. And if it's pretty long range, but if you're quick enough, you can get that one too. And then another one is going to sweep in from the right and drop off yet another tank right in front of the door, and you can get that one easily. So that's
especially from the ridge on the left.
Yeah, that's a total of three. Now, for my money, tagging a Phantom, especially this one as it's getting away, is the most fun that you can have in the game. I think that blowing up Phantom. And there it goes. Blowing up Phantoms is more fun than blowing up Scarabs.
Because they can escape.
Because they can get away.
Yeah.
The Phantoms are there to bring in these wraiths. And it was great. Even going back to Halo 2, you could do that, right? You're playing Metropolis, and Phantoms are...
Along the bridge, flying in
wraiths to drop off on the bridge. You can get that guy, and you can't destroy the Phantom, but you can knock the wraith off. You can make it drop the wraith into the river, mm-hmm. and you won't have to fight it. I thought that was great fun. Okay, and here's the third Phantom just dropping off the third wraith, but then he hangs for a while right there. He drags to drop off some troops behind. And that gives you a chance to take him out, too.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned about the destroying of the Phantoms, because it reminded me of your first encounter on Halo in Halo 1, when you crash in the dropship. What happens after you start walking along and seeing what the environment's like? You get a chance to actually see two Banshees coming up. And two Banshees... you know, when you're shooting them with the pistol or right. your AR and whatnot, they too have the chance to escape.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it was really, really, you know, thrilling when you see them slightly getting off in the distance and they think they've just gotten away, and you hit that one extra pistol round and they end up blowing up. That was tremendous fun trying to get them before they would leave.
Right. And it's not something that you have to do. It feels like a bonus.
Yes.
These aren't enemies that you have to kill in order to advance. And I guess that's the big difference between the Scarab. The Scarab drops down, and it's not really doing anything in that scene. If it can kill you, it can. It seems most interested in just staying alive, protecting its vulnerable spots from you, while at the same time giving you some opportunities to destroy it. But you can't finish the level. You can't go on to the next bit until you blow it up.
No.
Whereas the Phantom doesn't care. It does its job, and it'll get away if it can. And so it's an extra. It's a real emotional high point if you hit it.
So I guess it kind of brings up a moral dilemma as to how ethical it is to be blowing up fleeing enemies. Because if they're no longer a threat to you and they're departing the actual scene...
But he's going to come back and bring more Covenant troops. Man,
I guess
you know?
So. Yeah, well, it just makes you think.
He's not flying a white flag. It's not an ambulance. You know, it's not a United Nations truck.
I don't think
or
the
something.
Covenant have ambulances.
I don't think the Covenant have United Nations either.
No, I think they just eat them.
They eat United Nations?
As well as the wounded.
All right. Oh, wounded, okay. Yeah, I understand. Yep. Their own wounded, or?
I don't know. They don't seem to be against not eating their former commanders. Why not? Well, I get squeamish now.
I beg your pardon. So there he goes. Oh, and there's the third Phantom. So that's three
very
destructible
pretty.
Phantoms just in that sequence, just since they give you the tank. And
I'm surprised
more them all.
Covenant don't get killed by the actual
falling
shrapnel and falling debris from the explosions, yeah.
I think the falling debris is not it's not a collidable object for the Covenant.
Could be. I've seen people getting killed by falling debris in multiplayer.
See, and since we've been here, they've brought in another turret. There's now a turret that's on the opposite side of the ramp from the first one.
Yeah,
it's
the sentinels are gone.
It's now in front of the door facing outward.
So they're defending it.
Right, they're now defending the door where before they were attacking it. So presumably they lost that battle, and then they came back and reinforced themselves and won. And now we're coming in to reverse that again. No sentinels spawning now, though. Even though these units are intact, they could spawn. You can come on and blow those points up later when we come by.
All armor, form up on the lower doorway. Chief, get upstairs. Have your robot pick that lock.
I beg your pardon. I am 343 Guilty Spark, monitor installation 04.
Yeah, well, you're also our ticket through this wall. So if you don't mind...
I will gladly aid the Reclaimer's progress.
All right, so we've talked about... how this level is reminiscent of levels from Halo 1, mostly Silent Cartographer. But now we're coming up on a segment that's more reminiscent of the second level of Halo, which is interestingly enough, called Halo, which is the light bridge.
Yeah.
Now, there are some differences in the sequence. For instance, the first one, the switch, and I remember being impressed by this when I played the first game the first time. Usually, when designers put something like a switch in the game, if it's a switch that you have to hit to in order to advance, usually it's a single throw switch. You activate it, and then you're done. You've now performed your task. So in this case, you've turned the bridge on. You now can cross the bridge.
And that was it.
And usually the switch then stops working. It doesn't do anything.
But not here.
Same thing with elevators. You open a door or you go up an elevator, and once you've hit the button to do what you need to do, that's it. The button stops working. But you could turn the bridge off again if you wanted. You could try to jump the gap with a grenade or get across some other way or even come back. After you've nearly finished the level, you could come back to the bridge and go back across it by grenade jumping or using a vehicle. Here you can't do that.
No.
In fact, you don't even cross the light bridge. You just watch the tanks cross the light bridge.
Yeah, which I have to say, it seemed, this whole section seemed a bit short to me in comparison to the other ones where you've either been involved in activating bridges or, you know, going through comparative one section to another within the game. I had just hoped that once you got to this facility, because it seems to be a two-level facility. You know, there's a lower level for the tanks to go in, and there's the upper level. It seemed big. And once you get in there and you get a chance to see how beautiful it actually looks, you kind of want to enjoy it. You want to get a chance to either, you know, explore the environment or partake of doing other things before you even get to the switch. But here it just seems relatively quick. You go in, get the switch, get out.
It's supposed to be a structure like the one on Delta Halo that separated the flood-infected area from the uninfected area, the quarantine zone, this huge wall with a barrier on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've passed through it. Now, in that level, you spend a lot of time traveling vertically from the top of this barrier where you're dropped off down to the bottom where you get out and go outside.
Right.
Whereas this, we're just going through it.
Well, that was even more limiting.
It's not a tall structure like that. We're just driving right through it. But it does have the two levels, and it's also interesting to watch here the playback film that the vehicles that you drive up to the door are not the same vehicles that you see inside.
Yeah, that's
And those are not the same as the vehicles you get on the other end of the door when you get out.
Right. There's a whole new spawning sequence in there. And other things going on.
And when you detach and go to the free camera, you can actually see that once you go inside, the tanks that go to the lower level, as well as the tank, if you drove a tank up to the door on the top level, you can just leave it there and as you go inside and hit the button that turns on the bridge, poof,
they all
disappear.
Bye-bye.
Actually, it's even before that. It's while Guilty Spark is opening the door, all those tanks are despawned. It's as soon as the door closes behind you so that you can't get cannot get back out to the area you were at before.
Yeah.
Halo 1 was remarkable in the sense that almost every case you could
go forward or back.
Yeah, you could go to the end of the level and then walk all the way back. It really made the game world feel like a real place. Like it was there and things were going on even when you weren't looking. It's kind of like refrigerator door syndrome. You know, you try to open the door just enough to peek inside, see if the light is on even when the door is not open. And here, very much like Unreal Tournament or Gears of War, there's always something that blocks your progress backwards.
We're at a point. Okay, we're going on, and you can't go back anymore.
Right. It's for memory limitations, as I understand it. It can't be any other way. But,
yeah, I'm sure there were some technical ones.
It's still kind of disappointing. Now, you can't, without resorting to some heroic jumps, you're not really supposed to get out to this area where the tanks and the warthogs are about to cross the bridge.
No, and I really wish you could.
You're not meant to. You don't cross it yourself.
Beautiful. It's such a beautiful room, and it reminds me so much of the first area in Silent Cartographer where you don't even go you know, you get down to the bottom of the stairs and you get a choice. You can either go left or you can go right. And when you go right, you're treated with this little, you know, extended plank walkway that doesn't go anywhere. And when you get to the end, right, there's this cute little animation where you get a chance to see the Master Chief take a moment to see exactly how gigantically huge the interior of this thing is. And he kicks this little rock over. And,
yeah, the shaft cutscene.
And this finds, you know, is reminiscent to me. I find it so similar and such an homage to it. And yet, you don't get that same feeling. You go up, you turn the switch, and everything starts to happen automatically. And you don't really get a chance to partake in all the design and detail and the lighting and the textures and whatever else that didn't even seem remotely close to what was in the original Halo. And yet that one, it felt bigger. It felt more epic for that particular moment, and I don't know why. So I don't know whether it's a timing thing or it was just the way that this was scripted to go on really, really quickly. But there's so much more detail and so much going on that I really wished that somehow they were able to stretch this out, that it became a more interesting moment.
You can't walk across this light bridge, or actually you can, but you're not supposed to.
Nope.
But there are a few other things to see here. For instance, there are some Sentinels.
Yep.
And there are even some of the... We were actually just talking about this. We were saying that there weren't any of these mini Sentinels in Halo 3.
Like, and
we
saw, sure enough...
And there they are. There are a couple of them there.
Now, those mini, micro, do they have a special name?
I'm not sure what they're doing. They're just kind of floating around. But they are there. And, oh, wow, they're flying around pretty fast. Where's that one going?
They're going up. They always go up.
And there is a terminal up here as well. This is the second terminal in this
level.
Yes,
behind you.
But then you exit from this area, and the tanks just cross the light bridge in front of you. And, of course, after they've crossed, this space doesn't actually go anywhere. It's a blank wall.
Yep.
And then once you exit the room, they'll despawn again and respawn on the other side.
Not meant for Master Chief consumption, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
And the only thing you do get are these little itty-bitty rooms before you suddenly are treated
with
outside.
You going back outside again.
And another Scarab.
And another Scarab, yeah.
Just
second Scarab in the game,
bellowing down on top of you.
But it's not going to fight you here. I mean, if you step wrong, it
you're
can step
off a cliff.
On you and kill you.
Yeah.
But it's not meant to at this point. It's supposed to just walks over the hill and then despawns.
Nope. But you get a chance to see the building. Later. You get a chance to see the building for the first time outside. You get a chance to see slightly behind it, which you do see part of, you know, the interior middle. Orb planet that seems to, you know, be mechanical or built in nature, that the arc is surrounding. You get kind of a hint of that. And if you do skate the camera over to see where the Scarab is going, you get a little bit more of the skybox, and you get a chance to see a little bit more of it in detail.
You can also see the Scarab sinking into the ground.
It actually
sinks
issues.
Through the ground and then despawns.
Yep. And
then it'll come back later.
Come back later on the building.
But you can actually, again, one of the things I find that's fun about films is to actually zoom up to a perspective way far above the battlefield and just kind of watch things play out. Watch like you're watching a game of chess or watching a fight between two anthills. You can watch the units moving around. It gives you a different perspective on on how the battles play out.
But, this over the epic waterfall... where the new cartographer is actually located, you get a hint of that here, as well as some other interesting pieces
in the
sandbox.
Highly touted Halo 3 water effect.
Oh yeah, some people.
Now
are
here you can see
of.
if you bring the camera up behind the structure. Again, it is just a background, but you can see the planetoid in the center of the hub, and you can see the shelves, the stepping effect. Which is from strip mining, and you can even see through there. You can see like an orange surface. It looks like it might be the molten core of that planetoid.
Oh, the interior, yep. But you don't get to see all of it. It kind of falls away into this cloud
line. Obscured by clouds, but you'll get better views of it in other levels.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see it here. All right. Well, this is another appearance of the Goshawk. You can get it in a tank. Once his door opens.
Yep.
You have to walk down to it. Mm-hmm. But a Goshawk drives right up nearby you.
So obviously,
by a Marine.
Yeah, they want you to have
and
it.
And let you get on. And this reminds me very much of the series near the clamshell in Metropolis, where where Agosak also drives up and says that they could use a gunner.
Yep.
And the sequence only works on normal and heroic. On legendary, you are surrounded by snipers, and either you will be killed, or the driver will be killed, or both of you will be killed, most of the time before you can even drive around once.
Yeah, the Jackal snipers were tough in that game.
Now, this isn't as bad as that, but if you let this driver take you around, it can be pretty frustrating.
Just as hairy. Yeah, he's not the best guy in the world.
You get in, and he'll just sit there for a while if there aren't any targets. And then he'll drive halfway down and then turn around and drive backwards and drive onto a rock. And
yeah, it's an interesting rock for him, I'm sure.
So again, one of those areas where Halo is being most ambitious in its vehicle-heavy sequences. And when it works,
it's
it
great.
Works really well, and it's a lot of fun. But you can't expect to just pick up the game and get a sequence like that because it's not entirely within your control. Rent here now. We've taken a pause to look at a rock, and now we're going to drive right out between two tanks and let a chopper get behind us.
Yeah, he's not the best evasive drivers, and he
paused long enough for a Wraith to get a bead on us.
Yeah, they tend to not quite grasp the range of weapons and try to bring you in areas to shoot, mostly because I think they're trying to make it fun. But
so now we've driven in the middle. There's a Phantom overhead. There's a Ghost in front. There's three Wraiths and another Ghost.
It's like drive in the middle saying, hi, everybody, shoot me.
It's just a matter of time before things go wrong here.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of near misses. The Wraiths are really... If this was anything other than normal, you'd be dead by now.
Yeah, pretty much. And that kind of logic in driving is...
and there we go. You're dead.
Not the best. Yeah.
No.
So, obviously, it's sometimes best to either get a vehicle yourself...
And you have to start that whole thing over again.
Yeah.
From getting in the Goshawk onwards. And, oh, to get out. Well, that's true. That's what you do. You get back to get the tank.
Tank time. Tank beats everything.
Hit the win button.
Yep, and push it several times. And even so, when you're doing it, though, you can't see the other drivers and other tank operators, you know, either putting themselves not in the best position or you know, drawing out enemies for you to shoot. And when those work, it's absolutely fantastic. It's a whole lot of fun.
Another Phantom to get. So there's that fourth Phantom that you can destroy. They're worth a lot of points if you've got scoring on. Oh, and here comes the Scarab back. It spawns again behind the structure and then walks over the structure and comes down. And this is a pattern we'll see repeated. There's a large open area for the Scarab to stand in. Not a lot of room for it to do much of anything else. It will chase you a little bit if you're driving around its feet.
Yeah, it still seems limited, though.
There's really nowhere for it to go and not much for it to do other than... for you to kill it.
Right. Well, it seems to be the only thing that it's really doing is to try and get in your way from getting off to the next section. So it's defending this ramp before it leads into the building. But it seems to be guarding it so vehemently. It just seems to be, ooh, you know, dancing around in a single circle and not doing a whole lot. So it's more, instead of being an obstacle or a serious weapon that the Covenant are using either strategically or well, it seems to just be sitting around saying, you know, come shoot me, because it just happens to be there.
Oh, and that's what happened to that Gosa Warcog.
Yeah,
Scarab just kicked it right into the waterfall.
Yeah, that was quite a shot, actually. Let me take a look at that. Did he make it?
Is he going to make it? Is he going to make it? Oh, no. Just on
just
the edge.
Did it. Oh, that was slick.
And drove back in. Wow.
That was neat. You don't see that every day. But yeah, as far as the
he's
Scarabs
driving right
go,
back at its feet again, though.
Well, you know, he's tenacious. Yeah, it seems to periodically, you know, wave its vulnerable spots at you to give you
at
an opportunity.
At the lower difficulty levels, yes.
Yes.
It'll turn its back on you. Here it's paying very close attention to this Goshawk that's driving around its feet, whereas at the higher... and there goes the Goshawk.
Yeah.
At higher difficulty levels, it really seems to focus on the Master Chief. And he always turns to face you.
Yep. With the particular weapons, it's more free with him.
Yeah, which kind of limits your options. There are some high areas here. For instance, they do make it. There's this stone ledge, and then there's this structure here that you can use to climb up and get on.
Mm-hmm.
This structure here is a very practical use as a ramp. It's possible to jump a mongoose or a warthog actually onto the scarab, which can be a lot of fun. You could even do that in Halo 2, but this is more fun than that.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It would just be more interesting, actually, because you do see the scarab, crawl its way in over buildings and into valleys and even over this front area down the ramp where you're supposed to be going to the next section. It would just be kind of interesting if it had a little bit more range of maneuverability and, make it even harder for you to get it. To be more inclined to try and either weaken its legs and climb up on top of it with all these different rocks that happen to be around it. But most often than not, I end up trying to stay out of range of it and just pummel it with a tank.
Yeah, and that's all you can do, because aside from destroying the whole thing picking off the infantry and the manned plasma turrets that are on the sides, you can't really damage it permanently. Several weapons on it. It's got this plasma cannon in its head. You can fire at it and it will deform, but
it
always keeps working. It's got another smaller gun on the back on a turret, and you can deform that by shooting it, but it always still works.
Yep.
And you can shoot the legs and temporarily get it to lower down so that even if you're on foot on the ground, you can find a way to jump up onto it, to climb inside, to hit the vulnerable spots. But that's just a timer. It seems to self-repair or something and is able to stand back up. You can't blow a whole leg off and cripple it.
No, which I think would be kind of interesting if you could, or if you had to damage all the legs before, things like that even happened. But the leg damage just seems to be to slow it down temporarily. It'd allow you to jump on top of it and then, start getting inside. But from here, once it's defeated, then you have this ramp series that you have to go up to get into the interior to get to the cartographer.
Right. But again, it's really up to the player how difficult they want that to be.
Right.
Because you still have the tanks. You possibly still have a Gauss Warthog at this point. You can drive either one of those most of the way up the ramp and make easy work of everything that's there. There's a couple of hidden brutes in one area that you'd have to watch out for. And there is a point where you can't drive the tank up easily any further.
No.
The chief is climbing the spire and finishing off the last brutes. This is only normal, so there aren't any invisible ones. But
there's no difficult enemies.
Here's another short perspective interactive sequence here. This Marine comes up while Guilty Spark is opening the door.
Hey, what gives?
He sees our crawl to suit.
Well, let me have a look.
Ah! Oracle!
You bastard stung me!
I did not want you come to any harm.
Got a finger showing it.
And,
He zaps him.
Yeah, Spark shoots him. Never seen Spark do that before.
Hmm. Dramatic foreshadowing?
Yes.
Maybe?
Yes. Now, why Spark suddenly... Now, we did see him shoot something before, right? And the final cutscene for Floodgate.
Yes.
A beam emanated from the front of his face towards this memory unit where Cortana was stored, or Cortana's message was stored. And that was the first time we'd actually seen something like that happen. But here we see it used in an offensive capacity for the first time.
Well, he kind of mentions it as more of a safety measure, but...
stings this Marine. And
it's a new capability than anything we've seen before.
Yeah. And another thing we've never seen before, we've never seen... Covenant unit engaged in this sort of activity.
He's leaking.
Well, so we would be led to believe. Now, he stands
urinating
there,
enemies.
He stands there so long and vocalizing so, how shall we say, enthusiastically, let's say, I always wondered really what activity he was engaged in there.
Well, that's where your mind takes you. I don't really want to go there.
I'm just forced to come to this conclusion.
No pun intended.
Either that or that species just enjoys urinating more than I'm familiar with.
Well, I mean, you know, you drink the blood of your enemies and your bladder gets full, and considering they're over, what, 7-something feet tall?
Homer Simpson of Covenant.
So we get a chance to pass beyond him.
Yeah, and these levels look a lot, again, like the interior of Silent Cartographer. One of the differences, there's a lot more transparent surfaces here. There are a lot of areas that are, some are semi-transparent. You can just see through the walls to a texture beneath, very much like Assault on the Control Room.
Ooh, shiny.
But also more areas where you can actually see through to another part of the level.
Yeah, a lot of glass, a lot of transparent, or assuming it's glass, but a lot of transparencies, a lot of see-through or semi-see-through material.
It's transparent aluminum, of course. Lots of fusion cores here. Covenant fusion cores.
They just happen to strategically save them for you. And, of course, under here is where there is another terminal. And, strangely enough, the first time I went through this, actually a couple times, I did not find it. I was too busy engaged in combat and didn't explore around the corner. And if I had, then, you would be privy to another terminal location.
Where? No terminal here?
Yeah, underneath the stairs. Yeah, no, go back to where you were at. No, through the door. Yep. And keep going. Nope, turn to right. Left, up, down, you're spinning, left, there you go, through there. Right through that door.
Yeah, that's right.
What, you think I was making it up?
No, I thought you were just wrong.
Oh, no, sir, not here.
But we mentioned before, we watched this film for the first time, and this is also where there's the second skull for this level is also here.
Yes, is right above you.
Easiest way to get it to use the grav lift. But, these interiors still feel a little bit like filler.
Yes, to a certain extent.
Just something to do so that there's some space to traverse between the scarab and the cartographer.
Yeah, this particular room didn't really lend itself to the same enjoyment I'd had on many other Halo 1 interior levels, which are very similar.
Like the shaft in Silent Cartographer.
Correct.
There's a lot of unique areas there.
You know, the wraparound stairwell that you can fall down. The, you know, this seems very claustrophobic and has many parts to trip on.
And there's only one way. You can usually go around left or go around right, but basically there's only one way to traverse this.
Yeah.
Whereas with Silent Cartographer, there's, depending on where you might drop off, fall down, you could either drop all the way to the bottom, fight your way up. You could fight your way all the way down one way. There was a back entrance to the button area. Lots more options than you have here. And even once you get here, for instance, now we're out on the platform where the cartographer is activated. You can see the end of the level. The end of the level is just on the platform below. It's not that far away, but there's a kill zone.
Yes.
Between these two areas. So no matter how you do it, no matter where you jump, whether you take a vehicle or not, you can't survive this rather short fall.
Right, because they don't want you going there.
Skip those sequences. You're supposed to activate the cartographer and then turn around, go down the stairwell to the next level, and then be picked up.
Yep.
And those enemies haven't spawned yet either. They're not down there yet.
And unlike the original, you could actually skip sections if you had enough talent or you know were persistent enough to get beyond very lengthy, winding areas.
Right, or you could hijack a Banshee and assault in the control room and skip the whole level.
Or bring it down
vehicles. Not see any enemies at all.
Yeah, things like that. There's a lot of options there, whereas this seems a little bit more limited. Yeah. And conversely, here you're in very, very tight quarters with many, many enemies all coming from relatively two forward positions next to the doors and then around the side walls.
Good place for using a bubble shield.
Mm-hmm. And yet, once you get outside, there's not a lot. You're in this big open space, but there's very few enemies. It seems very, very sporadic until you get down to the next level below it. Where you deal with mostly the brutes.
Yeah, you'd figure that the door would be a good checkpoint. I mean, they could surround you outside and camp the door.
Yeah.
But they don't do it.
No, I don't know whether they just don't notice you or, you know, that wasn't a particular area where they wanted you to be.
Yeah, but, they could really have ambushed you right outside that door, wait for you to poke your head out.
Exactly, because I mean this is the choke point. And if you remember the original Halo, there were two or four elites hiding right by the switch,
right near the switch.
So
right
you kind of expected something to be there,
and nothing comes.
Nothing comes. Nothing comes out of the doors. There are no sentinels. It's just this big, wide open, beautiful space.
It's only after the sequence is played that you get attacked in this area.
Weird.
Yeah. One thing you can do, though, we talked before about the linearity, about choice, about having different ways to play the scenario.
Right.
There aren't a lot of multiple paths to take to get down here, but you can make the experience quite different by bringing a vehicle with you.
Yes, you can, which is totally not intended by Bungie, and it is not recommended at any time.
The chopper is far more maneuverable than it looks, and it'll actually fit through these doors. You can actually get a chopper all the way down here.
I believe you've tried.
I have several times. It's a lot of fun. It actually makes very quick work of this last fight where you have a brute chieftain and several other brutes and then some jackals.
I believe
it. You can run them right over and knock them off the edge.
Wow.
And on Legendary, it's a bit harder to do because they're all firing at you simultaneously. And that guy also has, an invulnerability power-up. And, of course, if he uses that before you hit him, you have to knock him off.
We'll have
you
to save that film for later.
Running them over. But that can be a lot of fun.
And now you get a chance to actually see the cartographer. Wow,
and, we just hit the switch to trigger the cartographer, and we're using a free cam at that point. And so the moment that you click the cartographer, Guilty Spark despawns. He just disappears.
Bye-bye.
He's gone somewhere else, and he'll reappear in the cutscene.
You get a chance to see the galaxy as a whole there for a second, which is just gorgeous, suspended over this open area, whereas the cartographer, the previous one, was very closed in this bottomless pit.
And here we get to see for the first time a map, a schematic of the entire arc of what it looks like, with all of these fingers spreading out from the center, and the center area that looks suspiciously like a
like
halo
a,
ring,
like a ring,
and then the center, the hub, the planetoid, which seems suspended more or less. It's not actually connected to the structure. There's an empty space in between, almost like this whole structure is orbiting around it.
It's too big to be a space station.
No comment. In fact, even here a little later in the sequence, you can see that center ring is even colored differently, almost like the display is telling you there are two separate structures here.
Hint.
The green is the arc, and the purple is what will turn out to be Halo Installation 04A, 04's replacement. Spark will say later that he didn't know about that. He wasn't sure about that, but it looks pretty obvious looking at this sequence again.
And this is where he mentions the barrier and the...
Right, the barrier. That's a curious point. We get to see a marker on the map that Spark says is where we are right now, this map location. And then there's a barrier, a force field that rises up around the center, just about the same location as the... As the ring itself, the forge where the rings are made. But we're given to believe that Truth has secluded himself behind this barrier. And since the level of the Covenant does end right near where this location is, it must be a pretty narrow strip of territory that's inside this barrier, but not yet in the empty space around the planetoid, because there's not a lot of area there.
No, it doesn't appear so. But just as he starts to get into explanations and something catches his eye, you're interrupted by Covenant.
Yes, by an unhijackable banshee.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Many a time people have tried.
As far as I know, is unhijackable. I never managed it.
And there's also the...
And, of course, there's another Phantom here, but I don't think you have the firepower to take that out. It takes assuming off pretty even, quickly.
Yeah, assuming it even is destroyable, which I don't think it is.
I tried to take it out with the chopper, but never was able to get enough. It only hangs around for a moment or so, and then it takes off.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get that grunt off the turret.
And then it's just a quick trip down to the next level to end this.
Which is funny, because when you look at
still
it
still no
quick,
way around. You have to go through the door.
Yeah, because if you look over the edge, there's nobody there. But then when you go down the stairs, there's all the brutes.
Right, well, they spawn while you're in the loading zone. Yeah. You go into this courier, back through the room you were just in. And then you exit through a different door. You end up going down.
Yeah, this reminds me a lot of the sections of Assault in the Control Room, where you get just beyond the bridge and you have a choice. Either you can just jump down on top of the actual building and walk your way up to actually get to the door and surpass an inordinate amount of interior levels before you get to another elevator to go down. Mm-hmm. And then from down there, you run into the two ghosts and other elites and a whole panoply of enemies going all the way up the zigzaggy stairwell before you even get to the door. Or you got a choice. You can just walk down the edge of it and jump down right onto the building. So this kind of section here has everything on that. There are enemies that technically you wouldn't have to even engage at all.
Yeah, you don't have to.
Unless you could actually jump down, of which now in this game they don't let you. There's a kill zone.
Another element that harkens back to Silent Cartographer. You have to pass through invisible elites coming on your way back up.
Yes, from and the invisibility effect is different.
Yeah, it is different. In fact, I would say it's they're more noticeable in Halo 3 than they were in Halo 1.
They don't shimmer as much.
You can see, but you can see
they're
them
more
even,
silhouetted.
Even when they're standing still.
Yeah, they're more silhouetted.
Whereas in Halo 1, all you could see was the lights when they're standing still. When they're not moving, there's no effect at all.
And of course, no sniper rifle to double check with the.
Yeah, and of course, in Silent Cartographer, when you go down to go to the security substation, you have to pass hunters on the way down and.
Yep.
And stealth elites on the way back up.
Yep, there's no sneaking past them either.
Oh, you can.
Can you?
Yeah, you can run right by them, actually.
There's more jackals in the stairway that also you remember from the original Silent Cartographer, except that stairwell was more, spiral staircase type, where you're actually going around corners and there's a pit in the middle fall down.
They were more dangerous in that level than they are here, though, because you walk through this doorway and you go down this ramp to enter the open area that ends the level, and they're right on top of you. They don't have room to prepare to fire. When you're coming back up from the cartographer in that level and they're coming down the ramp, they're far enough away that they have time to open fire on you. Plus, given what the weaponry situation is, here you happen to have a brute shot.
Right.
You're able to make really quick work of them, and you can also melee them. And in that portion, you may not have that that weapon loadout. You may not have an area effect weapon that you can use. If you've got grenades, usually that's the best trick. You just blow them off the ledge. A good trick here, using the fire grenade on the Brute Chieftain.
If you can get him.
And he doesn't trigger his invulnerability. And that pretty good. And he does throw the flare, but
he throws the flare, but
he's dead already.
Yeah, there's nothing he can do about it once you get those flame nades. To be honest, I wish there were more of those around, because
grenades?
Yeah, I really like those. Those are kind of a neat touch. I definitely like that addition. Spike grenades, not so much. I don't seem to be very effective with those. Not sure exactly why. Could be I'm just not used to them.
All right, so while this fight is finishing up, let's do our three items, our anger, sadness, and envy. We're getting the arc. What about the arc made you angry, if anything?
I don't know. I'd have
to
think about
Marine
that
stepping
one.
In front of the sniper, is that it?
That would be the first one that probably gets me the most, but I can't really say that it's indicative particularly of this level. That's indicative of pretty much any video game
any level out there.
So that's more of an AI issue rather than this particular level. The only thing that really angered me at all were certain sections I wish were longer, and other sections I thought were too long or too open. They had too many guys in small rooms and not enough guys in the big rooms. Certain elements you felt a lot more closed off than even in some of the more primitive, you know, elements of Halo 1 and Halo 2. You had a little bit more flexibility, such as, you know, jumping down in areas you weren't supposed to get to, and, you know, more exploratory type things. And that is really an element that I think lends more credence to replayability. Because I can remember replaying Halo 1 for 5 years. Halo 2, definitely not so much. I wasn't a big fan of that. But Halo 3 has so many elements I do love. But at the same time, I don't catch myself replaying it a lot. Simply because I know now I can't go over here without, you know, either a whole lot of work or a whole lot of cooperation from other people. It doesn't quite have the same flair, I think, that it possibly could. So that would probably be my anger there. But again, it's I can't say it's really indicative or particularly limited on this level. There are definitely some things I wish were different, even with the Scarab and some other vehicles and things.
I have to cheat on this level.
How so?
I can't really think of anything that makes me angry about this level. I think if I had to pick one, it would be that it's there are some sequences that you can really only enjoy to their fullest when you have a good amount of control over your allies, where they're sitting, what weapons they're using, and what vehicles they're in. And you can't get that level of control. It's frustrating that they run ahead without you. They get in vehicles and they take off before they're ready, before you're ready, and that I find frustrating.
Yeah,
for sadness, I think the only thing is that when the level is over, I mean, it's one of the game's longer levels, but it's always disappointing when it's over.
It does have a beautiful ending. As far as sadness, though, the ending, I can definitely see that as being a sad point. That it can't continue, but it is a beautiful ending. It's very cinematic. It's very beautiful. It's one of the more beautiful parts in the game that you get a chance to experience. And it's definitely a detailed cutscene where you get information on what the Sentinels are doing. You get a chance to see Johnson in reprises character and his interactivity with Guilty Spark.
Okay. Before we get to that, let's finish it off. Envy, is there anything in another game that we wished that Halo had so that it could be in this level?
Smoke grenades.
No, I'm kidding. Keep saying smoke grenades.
No, I'm kidding. Scratch said we'll have to edit that one out. Sorry, it's a running joke around here. I think
if you look at what made me angry about it, it's the at least minimal squad control, the way Half-Life 2 has, or the way Mass Effect has. Actually, Mass Effect does it probably better than any other game I've seen so far.
Yeah, I've seen
and
the variation.
It's not
options,
even really a tactical shooter. It's an RPG.
And yet you can control your character movements. Yeah. You can control your character weapons. You can control your character behavior.
Them to attack, you can tell them to take cover, and you can position them fairly accurately, better than in Half-Life 2.
You can use them better as well. So if you want them to run out and distract a guy while you shoot him,
without risking them too, because they don't die before they're supposed to. They just get knocked out of combat, and then when you finally win, they'll come back. You'll have to heal them, and they'll have to recharge their shields and all that kind of stuff. But they don't die. If you die, the sequence ends and you have to go back to a previous save. But you can't lose your allies the way you can lose your allies in Halo 2, where you know Marines are killed and that's it. You have to wait, and sometimes the game will give you more, and sometimes it won't.
There's only a couple of different things that I could possibly imagine as wanting in this, but even if you did though,
gravity gun.
I think that would kind of take. Okay, I get smoke grenades. You get the gravity gun
that throws smoke grenades.
There you go. Okay.
All right. So we finished that off. So there's just two more points about this final cinematic. Now you mentioned when we were looking at the film the first time, the fact that the ending of this level is not quite as dramatic as the ending of Silent Cartographer.
Yeah, you don't get that same kind of punch at the end, and I think it's probably because when the ending of the first Silent Cartographer, where you start going down the shaft and leads into my favorite opening sequence That ending where you hear the voiceover where Cortana starts to talk, and she's giving, you know, cutesy little line about, you know, bringing the vehicle down into the structure, and surprising the Covenant. That whole sequence after you've come out of this pit filled with, you know, all these Covenant that you've been struggling to get through for so long and race past and you know, finally
achieve
this door.
They basically chase you up onto this platform.
Into a bunch of invisibles of which, you know, you then have to burst your way through and get out into the daylight, and there's your ride. It's a big, not only a relief, but then it leads into very quickly when you see this beautiful scene where it pulls up and swings around and then goes back into the ground.
But here, your ride doesn't show up until after you beat all the enemies.
Right. And, you know, Johnson's threatening to shoot the Sentinels there.
That's the second issue. This huge quantity of Sentinels appears out of nowhere.
And he waves.
Johnson wants to shoot them.
One of them
waves.
Inexplicably waves at the Master Chief. And I think there's something subtle in there. I don't know if they've mentioned anything like that in the books or whatnot, but they did it for a purpose. I don't know if they were just being cute or whether it was supposed to mean something where he's recognized.
I don't know. It comes down to the human and Forerunner thing, right?
Yeah.
But he waves at the Chief.
Yeah.
Specifically. Not at any of the other
humans. At Keyes.
Either just as much or just as much not Forerunners as
anybody
else.
Or even a Guilty. I mean, you'd think he would something communication
Guilty
between
Guilty.
Guilty
doesn't belong there. He's having to hack through doors to get through it.
Yeah.
It's not his.
Nope.
This is not his place.
He's not wanted.
I always wondered why we don't see why the Ark doesn't have its own avatar, why the Ark doesn't have its own AI or its own monitor.
Thank you. I was going to bring it up.
I suppose that mendicant bias and offensive bias perform those functions, but you don't interact directly with them. It's just the text you're reading in the terminal.
Yeah.
And we don't even know if they have a physical presence the way Gilbert
Spark has. No, there's no embodiment in a character or anything.
So the second thing, though, is Spark says that we shouldn't fire on those Sentinels because they have a priority task, and they zoom off.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they going?
To war.
No, don't say that.
I'm sorry, that was for Conrad.
No. We're led to believe that
I think they're going to the Halo Ring. I think they're.
Why though?
Well, you know, obviously the interaction that Truth has had some kind of effect on him, where the barriers had to come up. So obviously they're trying to hinder or prevent him from actually activating.
Okay, then why don't we see them in the next level?
Either one of two things. Either they're being sent directly to the Halo Ring itself to either disable it or complete it.
If the map is correct, the barrier is between the cartographer and Halo 04A.
Right.
So how do they get through the barrier if
we
have to fight our way through?
Well, that's just it. See, we're alien to the environment. They are not. I'm sure they would have access or abilities to go somewhere.
Why can't we follow them in, then?
You mean after they've
I don't think
gone
there's
through?
A way around this. This is just a plot hole.
Oh, you think they made a goof?
If we're expected to believe that these Sentinels are going to the Halo, and we're expected to believe that Halo is the center, and that this wall that we saw with the beams rising above it is the shield, then theoretically, that should be the case. And when we get to the next level, you have to drop those barriers and get inside after we've killed Truth. That's where we see the Halo right up. So that's true, that the Halo installation is on the other side of the barrier.
Right.
And if the barrier keeps us out, why shouldn't it keep the Sentinels out? And if it doesn't keep the Sentinels out, why can't they go through and open it up for us?
Well, there's another question that I think that you brought up is that the Sentinels had different varying levels of defenses that don't seem to be here, such as the larger weaponized ones that you saw in Halo 2.
Yeah, but there aren't any of those.
There aren't any of those here. You get the small itty-bitty ones. You get the standard size ones that we've seen before.
Which were mostly, in the previous games, were mostly for flood control. And
right.
At this point in the game,
there aren't any
flood on the Ark yet.
But if Truth and the brute forces, which are scouring, you know, this particular installation, looking for a way to get control of it.
But we don't see any of them.
No, we don't.
Why not?
Good question.
Might be a gameplay issue. They decided not not to put any of those in. Could I don't be. Know why.
Well, yeah, well, you think about it. I mean, how powerful those things are and what they can do. Where would you put them and how would it affect it?
There are several three-way battles. I mean... Mm-hmm.
Well, Bungie and loves three ways.
We would have a four-way battle because by the end of the next level, there's not just Covenant.
Yeah, they love three-way combat.
And human forces.
Yeah.
But there are also Sentinels. You get to the last level and there are Sentinels there too.
Mm-hmm. So,
but only after the Flood show up. So it's to me, it's a real open question what these Sentinels are doing and where they're going. Some people, I think, have speculated that they're actually not going to Halo 04A, that they're actually headed to Onyx, that there's a part of the Onyx novel where Sentinels appear from somewhere else, and that maybe if there's a portal here at the Ark that goes back to Earth. Because Earth is important. There must be a portal that goes from here to where Installation 04 was to transport the replacement there.
Right.
And if there are portals going to those locations, well, there might be portals going to other important locations like Onyx, which was a quote-unquote shield world. So maybe this is giving us a hint at where in the timeline of Halo 3 the events of Ghosts of Onyx occurred. Maybe these Sentinels are going there. But I think that's a bit of a stretch. I don't think Bungie expects that most Halo fans will have read the novels or even be aware of the novels enough to know that this event connects to that, that this event should be given such importance within the story. I think it's supposed to be related to Halo, to the replacement ring, but it doesn't seem to fit.
Yeah, I have it, but I haven't read it personally yet. It's an interesting question. It is definitely an element that I'm sure a lot of people have talked about and speculated over. I don't know if Bungie's actually come up with any official announcement or mention of it.
No.
Or, you know, whether they just like to leave that open up to interpretation for the fans.
Well, they usually do.
Yeah. I don't know whether, you know, Joe or any of the other guys in writing the story decided that this was going to be something they'd bring up later in future titles.
I think we're given to believe that Halo 3 Recon is going to be
Bungie's last contribution.
I don't think they're putting that in there to tie up a lot of these loose stories. I think it's a standalone thing. It's a smaller story involving a different character.
Could be, and considering that Halo 3 Recon is going to be, you know, very small in comparison.
If they make that ODST more important by the Master Chief by having him unravel all these mysteries, I think that's kind of unfair.
Oh, well, I don't see that happening personally. I mean, the amount of length and story that they've had so far, I can't see them introducing a brand new major and even more important character at this late stage in the game. No pun intended. So,
all right. Well, I think that wraps it up for the Ark.
Yes, it
level
does.
Level 6 of Halo 3, and next time, level 7, the Covenant.
Ooh. So tune in next week when. Oh no,
no,
it might not be next week.
Don't say that.
What should we say? Just goodbye. See you next time.
I think that was it. We don't need to say anything else.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, but it just seems kind of like a can't lead it on woo.
Why not?
We're gonna cut that. I don't know.
No, don't cut it.
All right.